Welcome back, everyone. This is the Skulls Cast, episode 70. My name is Kaz, and joining me today is a special guest of the show who has been with us since the very beginning in question form. Really before that, when I had a form spring, back when that existed, he would heckle me with questions. He encouraged me to try out Dark Souls, and at his behest, I am currently in the middle of a Dern Fun and very blind run of that. And we're tonight, it's Gnome Bitten. I forgot to get to the...
Hello, I am Gnome Bitten.
Yeah, the introduction part of the introduction. But yeah, Gnome Bitten and I are going to talk about The Banner Saga, a game that we have both played to completion at this point.
Yeah, it took
and
me a
I
while.
Think, yeah, I think, honestly, Gnome has more greatly completed it than I have. Because I haven't, there's another like part of the game. We'll get into that, and we'll figure it all out. But I wanted this time to have another skull on, because if I just put in, you know, Medibot or Slyonine or somebody, it would be there. I wanted the raw toast, you know. I wanted the source of it. And I heard a lot of noise out of you when the Banner Saga launched. You were talking about it. You encouraged me to play it, and you encouraged Rosella to play it as well, internet friends. So, yeah, I tried it out. I played the whole thing. Played the story mode, I should say, and I have my own thoughts about it. So, does that sound accurate?
That sounds roughly accurate. It is a game that I didn't back it on Kickstarter, but I did sort of keep tabs on it, because it seemed like it had a lot of things going for it.
Yeah. Okay, so let me describe a little bit, or if you would like to describe the origins of the Banner Saga, what this game is and where it came from.
Oh, I know a little bit about it. A bunch of people left BioWare a while, like several years ago. I forget exactly which games they had worked on, but they had made BioWare RPGs.
Makers of Dragon Age. I'm pretty sure that the people who did this also worked on...
I want to say that's accurate.
That's verifiable. Someone can you guys have the internet available to you at your fingertips. Go ahead and like Google search that. But The Banner Saga is what you're Google searching, and BioWare.
Name of the studio is Stoic, and they started a Kickstarter to make this game. The whole appeal was that it would be a Viking themed tactics game where you have your little units on a grid and you fight each other. And it looked really good, and so I started paying attention to the Kickstarter. But yeah, that's basically its backstory.
Okay.
Really.
Yeah. So the Kickstarter ended up making 7 times over the amount of their goal.
Yes.
And so they made they had immediately gotten all of their stretch goals and everything, and the game project became a lot larger than its initial intended design.
Yes.
This also made it take much longer to produce.
It was delayed several times, even. It was supposed to come out in November, and then ended up getting pushed. And I think it was supposed to come out in February, and then got pushed to November 2013.
Yeah, there. Okay, so it did come out in November 2013, right?
I believe so, but probably not. I'm probably a horrible liar.
The thing is, I didn't play it until... like February of this year, I think. It certainly was this year that I played the game.
Yeah, I didn't play it immediately after it came out either, but I didn't play it all that much after it came out. So I think I played in January.
Okay, well, that's the origin story of the game, and let me describe a little bit about the basics of what Banner Saga single-player mode is. And feel free to correct me or interrupt me, Gnome, if you want to interject or amend I probably don't have to tell you that, but I have to tell them that I'm telling you that so that it seems a little more normal when you inevitably do. The Banner Saga, you start out as a big Viking tall man who's you start out as a half... moose, half man, no, is half steer, half man. They are called Varl. They're big and tall and have horns.
Yeah, they
wield axes.
They're giants.
They're giants. They have beards. They don't have women or procreate. They just sort of were made And there's so many of them.
Yes.
That's,
one of the,
I think, accurate. That was weird, but...
Yeah, one of the gods just made all the Varl.
He just made, okay, here's a bunch of Varl. And you start out by breaking up a bar fight and going to collect taxes. And immediately, you have, like, this very brief combat tutorial, a little bit of backstory of the world. They tell you that the sun has stopped, so the sun no longer moves in the sky. And then they just sort of forget that point, and it never comes up again.
Never comes up again.
And then you're just on... You talk to people a bunch, and you're on this long march. Yeah. On your march, you encounter stone men called the Dredge.
Yes, the Dredge.
And they're introduced pretty early on. They're the bad guys of the game, and you beat them up.
They are definitely not the Darkspawn.
It's the not Darkspawn. Then I read this from... Okay, I don't know the producer's actual name, but one of the creators said it's really hard to make like an actual unique thing, and they tried very hard to make something not resemble anything in particular else and be its own kind of thing. I think they did a decent job. The Dredge really feel like themselves and each other until they don't, and we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But so you get this brief tactics introduction. You have some dialogue. It's big old portrait here, and then shot counter shot of portraits talking, and you have some choices, dialogue choices, 1, 2, 3 or whatever. You interact with this game by clicking on it. It is a PC game. I don't know if we mentioned that, but it is a PC game.
Yeah, I don't know if it has. I don't think it has an iOS port. Although it would work really well on iOS, maybe.
It honestly feels like it was designed for a touchscreen.
Yeah.
Because everything is single touch, and you don't, there's no right clicking, there's no,
you don't
check and resolution.
You don't, skip actions by mashing the space bar or anything. You just
right, and you don't have like a select click or an information thing. It's always there's always a single click control and only a single click control for whatever you want to do, which is good in that it's simple and bad in that it really gets in the way a lot of the time, in particular in the combat. I never felt like I was lost in conversations.
Yeah. All the conversations are relatively simple, I think.
Okay, so you're on a long march for whatever reason. I'm going to try to stay out of spoiler territory until I go into it.
Yeah, and you're playing the Oregon Trail, by the way.
Yeah, you have supplies, you have money called renown, you have clansmen, warriors, and Varl as three different numbers that the game keeps track of. To begin with, you don't actually have any clansmen. You're all, warriors and Varl.
Yeah, when you're in Ubin's team, all he has is Varl, I'm pretty sure. He might have a few fighters.
Yeah, well, as soon as Luden joins...
Yeah, as soon as Luden joins, you get fighters. Yeah.
Yeah. So you go on this march, you have a fight, and then the scene just sort of cuts away, and then you join a different group. Then you are now on the other side of the continent, and it's Rook and Alette, and you find, oh no, it's a stone man in the woods who has just killed a deer.
And,
we have to fight him, and you fight him. And then you find that, oh no, our village is burning down, the Dredge are attacking, and you collect up your forces and run away, basically, taking as many clansmen with you as you can. You make choices that affect... how much numbers you get from whatever. You could make a choice that results in, say, more renown, but you lose clansmen. Or perhaps you save more clansmen, but you lose fighters. The numbers tend to fluctuate based on your choices.
Yeah, I think the first choice you have in that branch is... You're asked if you want to risk encountering more Dredge in order to gather your supplies. And that's the first choice, is do I risk more fighting in order to have more supplies?
Yeah, sometimes sometimes your choices lead to more encounters. When you win an encounter, you get renown, you get money.
You get renown for killing enemies, and then I think you get extra for just winning.
Yeah. Your individual fighters, because you will encounter many on the way. I don't know that... Man, do you just get them all? Was there any,
there,
like...
There are some mutually exclusive ones, and...
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Especially in Frostvelter.
Yeah, the, I never got that.
Because
by the end, it was just sort of like, oh, no, you could have everybody, except for people who had, like, died or run away.
Yeah, some that come to mind is there's two different human units you can get in Frostvelter.
Hmm.
I think they're not mutually... Maybe they are mutually. There's Onef and Ekel, like the crazy guys.
Uh-huh.
You can...
Oh, you can get right.
You can get those guys.
Yeah, and you can get Onef or Ekel.
Very late in the game, you can get the Notgenulf and then quickly lose him. And...
Oh, really? That guy?
Yeah. Sigbjorn, if you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The even too huge Varl.
Yeah, the guy who is not quite as cool as Gluff, but still is a Gluff.
Right, so there are a lot of units, and they all have names, and they also all have basically the same personality.
That's maybe the biggest fault of the game, is they never take the time to characterize their units. You get one most little chats with them at the camp, and then that's it.
And that's it. That's your one bite at most of them having any character at all ever.
Thank you.
Rook is no exception. Rook has no personality. Alette sort of does, but doesn't get it fleshed out that much.
Yep.
Ekel does, but Onef doesn't. It's a shame.
Onef gets more if you have him in your party, but his personality is that he's evil, and that,
yeah, he's just
that's spoilers, by the way.
Mm, yeah, well, little minor spoiler there.
Obviously evil man is evil.
The guy who suggests you betray his friend with him, the traitor.
Yeah, like, the guy whose class name is Backbiter.
His class name is Backbiter, and he introduces himself to you by betraying someone. I don't think that's too huge a spoiler, but it did. It did catch me by surprise the first time that happened. We're into minor spoiler territory.
Rest in peace, Eagle.
If you really like stories and don't want this spoiled, I suggest first that you don't play the Banner Saga. But if you do choose to play the Banner Saga, you can go ahead and stop listening now. I think from now on we're just going to be pretty free with whether or not we're spoiling things.
You bring up an interesting point. I don't think that any of the characterization in the game is that good. Most of it's very scant.
Yeah.
Really,
I mean,
characters like Mogir get characterized the most.
Yeah, oh my god, Ubin?
And Ubin, yeah, Ubin,
Ubin is Ubin is freaking great, but he's only on camera for, like, one scene, and then you just sort of forget about him and it fades into the background. It's like, no, come on! I wanted... Oh, because he doesn't fight?
Yeah,
he's... And he doesn't have any, like...
Fine. He's just the old tax man.
This is the guy. He's an old tax man and a writer, and he is in an oldness contest with two other guys, one of whom you get to meet.
Yeah, the oldness contest is extremely charming.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I mean, most of us die. We all die fighting. No one knows what our natural lifespan is, so we three figured we'd see.
And it's like there's one guy who just sits in the Capitol just doing nothing, trying to get old. Ubin, who just collects his taxes, and then, crap,
the other
guy's name.
Yeah, you can get him as a fighter. He was the,
I used him a lot.
Friendly guy who can pass his turn to other people. Okay, so, there are... I can't remember the guy's name either. I'm just going to take over for a bit and keep talking. Really can't remember that guy's name. But anyway, characterization. You're with Rook for most of the game. When you go with his caravan, you have, like, all of the numbers. Clansmen, fighters, Varl, and Renown. The game keeps track of the number of days since it began, and your journey counts down in days. There is a little face in the interface as well that indicates the general happiness of your caravan.
Yeah, morale.
And if you're in, like, good morale, then your fighters will have bonus willpower when you get into... I'm sorry, your heroes will have bonus willpower when they get into a tactics fight. And neutral morale, they're sort of like, you don't get any bonus. And for negative morale, you get a willpower penalty.
Yes.
And so to understand willpower, we're going to have to understand a little bit about how the tactics works, and I'll let you just tear right into that.
Okay, the combat in the game is almost used well, and at its core is really simple. It reminds me sort of Fire Emblem and its simplicity.
Yeah, it honestly reminds me a little more of the other Fire Emblem game that has little war units. What the hell is that one called?
Advance Wars?
Advance Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your units only have a couple of stats that matter. They have their armor and their health, and their health is also their strength. So high health units will do more damage.
Yeah, the strength score is used for both, you know, whether you're alive or how much damage you do with a strength attack.
And your armor is your defense. So if someone tries to attack your health, they take their strength minus your armor, and that's the damage they do. And that's maybe the biggest part of the combat in the game, is how you have to manage armor in your own units,
right,
and the enemy.
And you can reduce enemy armor by using a break attack.
Yeah.
When you do armor damage, you do a different amount equal to your break value. That's a stat that the character has.
Yeah, which it can lead to your units having different, like, capabilities. Like, most, like, Gunolf, I keep coming back to him.
Yeah.
He's very strong.
Gunolf has a high tower. He's strong. He doesn't have a lot of armor.
Yeah, he has low armor and low break. So you sort of have to keep him out of the way until you soften the enemy units up already.
Yeah.
And then he comes in and sweeps.
Importantly, enemy units basically use the same rules you do.
Yes, they have armor and they have...
They have armor and strength. You know, it's like move and attack. They're melee and ranged units.
And one of the other important things is the willpower and exertion.
Mm-hmm, exertion.
Exertion, the very powerful stat. You have, like, your willpower, you have a number of points, or, like, action points in certain kinds of D&D, where you can just spend them to add numbers to your things. Like, you do an attack, it would deal 2 damage, you spend a willpower, it becomes 3 damage. And your exertion is how much willpower you can spend on any particular thing.
That's right. They teach you this early in a kind of ham-fisted way that I don't like. I like that there is a character they give you who has no exertion.
Yeah.
And so you very rapidly learn, hey, wait, he's missing something. Why can't I use my willpower? Well, you can't because he doesn't have the thing.
Again, coming back to Gunolf.
The thing that I don't like is that it is Gunolf, and there is a different man in the tutorial named Gunolf who wears different clothing, and when he comes up again, Ubin is like, hey, you bought new clothes. And Gunolf's like, yeah, I wear green now instead of black.
You look like a frog.
I told him that he looked good. And he was like, thanks, I guess.
I told him he looked like a frog, and he said it's better than looking like an eggplant.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's kind of cute. Gunolf never speaks again.
You know,
then
he does if he's alive.
He could die. But no, I mean, the thing is, you see him use a move and use his willpower in the tutorial battle.
Yeah, he actually
and then,
like, 2 exertion to move 2 extra spaces.
Right, and then you get him and it's like, wait, I just saw him do this. What happened? And it's like, oh man, he went down. Is that a penalty? And it's really confusing. So they really should have given you a different character who has no exertion.
They did that in the tutorial anyways. There's just a guy called Shieldbanger in the tutorial, and he never comes back again. He's this generic Varl unit.
They have so many characters and they couldn't pick one.
Yeah, he's Shieldbanger.
I mean, that's part of the problem with the characterization of the game is they gave themselves too hard a job. There's like 35 or 40 people, and you get to talk to each of them once. Look, give me, like, 7 people and have them have actual conversations and don't try to tell this, like, epic saga-tastic story and fail at it, because you will fail.
Yeah.
They definitely
failed at characterization.
I think they easily failed at characterization, and that given the scope and structure of the game, it is a near impossible challenge to do so. That
yeah, the game is not super long, and they didn't really have a lot that of was, time to.
Right, that's kind of what surprised me, is that you know it's called Saga, and it does. I mean, it's decently lengthy, but then it just sort of stopped.
Yeah, like, it, to me, it felt like the ending of like a Lord of the Rings book. Like they had a right. final act, but it feels like there's another one or two extra games coming after.
Right.
I don't know if there is
something to justify the name of Saga.
Yeah.
The general overarching story is that the sun has stopped, the dredge are coming, and we have to go.
Yeah, and the gods are dead as well.
Yeah, they say the gods are dead. And so we presume that gods at once existed. We pass them along the way, the god stones that they left behind or that people left behind in worshipping them or something.
Yeah, they're like stones that the real Viking civilization
yeah.
left around.
No, there's a lot of flavor, and honest to God, I think that the game is made out of just flavor text.
Yes. Really, well, that's the best parts of the game.
Yeah, when you open up the map, you can click on any given area and learn its history.
Yeah.
You can talk to people and get their flavor text. Whenever you pass a waypoint, there's some little bit of flavor about the world. Along your way, you will encounter one of many random events. Some are like every time events and some are random events, and those all like add flavor to the world. And there's a ton of it all over the place.
Yeah.
And they spent all their effort in flavor text writing.
That and they're some of the best things about the game are just how it looks and how it sounds.
Mm.
And
the look,
tone, and
right.
set dressing.
I cannot fault the sound design at all. Every sound felt correct, even like Foley and like stabbing, slashing
yeah.
kind of things, clunks, the chipping noise that Armor Break makes, the various magical moves, Bellower's scream.
Yeah.
Jeez, that thing is spooky. And all the like sound noises are good. Music is really good
yeah.
and always felt appropriate.
Music by Austin Wintory, who has made really good music before.
Mm.
If you're familiar with Journey, he did the music for that.
Huh, really?
Yeah. So he knows what
he's
doing.
That makes sense. It's a very atmospheric kind of music. You never get bored of it. I always felt like, okay, it's the battle music, and then felt like, tactics time. And
yeah, it's all very
see.
Good. I really like the setting of the game, like just like the Varl and the concept of.
I think everyone kind of fell in love with that.
Yeah.
Like the makers and backers alike.
That's what they sold it on. And
mm-hmm.
really, if
you just want to read flavor text, then this is the game for you.
Yeah.
Like, honest to God. I can
really good D&D setting or something. I don't know.
Whoa, it pretty much would.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a dungeon master could hone in on the questions that players are actually asking. And trying to figure out what that's about.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of, like, you have a lot to choose from, you know? Each person could have, like, their own faith or their dead god to pray to or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe they come from the dredge or pray to the dredge or whatever. You know, there's a
yeah.
lot of world
lot of,
building.
Yeah, a lot of room
lot of flavor.
To expand upon. Mm. A lot of room to have it work when it really doesn't. They just didn't put enough time into it.
But back to the tactics side of things.
Yeah.
So we have health and, or I'm sorry, strength, which is health and damage, armor, willpower, exertion, break.
And,
is there anything
it.
Else? Like yeah, there isn't anything. And you also get a move.
Yeah, you get a move and a passive.
And a passive, that's right. So every character that you meet has a class. Many of them are extremely similar.
Yes.
So you'll have, like, Varl guy with a shield, and other Varl guy with a shield, but slightly different, and then other Varl guy with a shield, but slightly different than those two.
Yeah.
And the distinctions felt pretty artificial.
Yeah, and they usually end up playing exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have Gnolf and, like, Hakon.
Right, and
they're
what
both
they'll
strong Varl, and they
what
do
they'll
this,
do is what they'll do is share a passive,
yeah,
and then their active ability is different. Then active ability you spend willpower doing, and yes. it can rank up with you. So there are like three tiers of that. There are five levels of promotion for each unit.
And I think every two levels you get another tier of your active
ability. It's like it's 1, 3, 5 for your active abilities, and you start at one anyway.
You start at one. Most
you need
do anyway.
You need a number of kills to promote, and then you can then pay the cost and renown to promote a character, which goes up as you go up. It's that part of the game makes sense. The numbers that they have in the game are basically functional.
It's all relatively low number too.
Yeah,
like a unit with 20 strength is gigantic.
That would be huge. Oh my god, you'd be this crusher monster, and you still, you know, it's structured so that even to the end of the game, an 8 armor, 8 strength unit is a threat to you.
Yes, and so. Really, your archers are never going to be much larger than that. Like I think they top out at 8-8, and they are maybe the best units in the game.
I ended up using archers and wizard a lot because of that. You know,
The wizard,
a big guy.
I really like the wizard though, just because of his capability of just owning the hell out of you.
Yeah, he seems a little overpowered, but we'll get to him.
Yeah.
The other thing I failed to mention, the unit sizes are different. So your Varl companions take up four squares.
Yeah.
And your human units take up only one.
And the dredge also have giant men and normal sized men.
Yeah, they also have slingers, which are like their version of archers.
Yeah.
And they even have evil wizards.
They have the stone singers.
The stone singers.
There's maybe two of them in the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, if you... Yeah, there's the one that you encounter for the purpose of learning what a stone singer is, and then the one that you encounter for being in the end fight. I think there's another one along the way.
I remember one at the Siege of Boersgard. Was there one in the final fight?
There was. There absolutely was one in the final fight. He was the biggest problem.
That's three, then.
He was a bigger problem than the boss.
I don't want to brag. I didn't have a lot of trouble at the final fight. I just ignored everyone but Belor.
But hitting him gave him a turn.
Yes, I know. I almost died, but I killed him. Anyways.
I don't know what the secret there is.
All of my people were very high level because of a thing I want to talk about when we get to it.
Okay, well.
Combat.
Combat. The winning strategy that I found, and this is counterintuitive from the perspective of every other tactics game that I've played, is that your mission is not necessarily to kill your opponents because, crucially, that does not get you a turn advantage on them. Order goes you, them, you, them, you, them, until one side has only one person left.
Yeah, and then you go into pillage mode.
Mm-hmm. And then you get, like three moves to their one because you have more people.
Yeah.
That tends to end pretty quickly.
Yeah, you murder them.
Honestly, I don't know why pillage is a mode. I guess just to
make it end quickly so you don't have
this one guy going back and forth.
You'd have one guy taking a turn every other turn.
Yeah, we just look kind of silly. It even does look silly when you get them down to two and you still have your like six fighters standing or whatever.
Yeah,
but all the same, if it's 6-6, you kill a guy, now it's 5-6, but that doesn't actually get you any great advantage because they still get just as many turns as you, so they're still acting just as much as you do, which means that it's far better almost all the time to reduce units to low strength.
Yeah, you maim them and then let them live so that they take up actions without accomplishing anything.
Yep. Cripple rather than kill is basically the name of the game. And once you learn this, once I picked up on that fact, every single fight in the game was easy until the end. Although the very last fight got difficult.
Yeah, Bellower became a problem. I've heard a lot of people have problems with it.
Mm. I mean, it's also been kind of a while since I played this game, because I didn't feel like replaying it or diving more into what the combat is.
That's what I'm here for.
Though. Yeah, I just kind of did it once and said, okay, this is what I used to do it, and I did it, and okay, great.
I don't think I'm playing the game again either. But
yeah. That's the weirdness of combat. And there are a lot of like idiosyncrasies with the various moves that honestly feel like they were barely even designed in and just sort of happen, and when they happen I'm always confused.
Yeah.
So for instance, the tall dredge, the big guys, the shield, they have this move where they like stomp and like push everyone back, and then for each square that a unit slides in being pushed back, they lose one armor. So a bunch of like numbers pop out.
I think it has a range of 4 or 2. So they usually knock you back 4 squares and you lose 4 armor.
Hmm. See, I don't know that. And the game tells you a lot of information, but not the information that I want. So you can like click on a unit and see what its moves are and what its passive does.
And all of its stats.
Right. And then sometimes you have, like, the active move that plays by its own rules independent of your strength score or whatever. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah, like, the weird one with that is, like, the Hogan and Mogan's thing. Where
yeah.
It attacks several times, like, randomly doing armor and health damage. And then its last hit does 1 plus X damage, where X is the number of adjacent allies, which... weird.
Why would you go into it making it that complex?
I don't know. Those units are supposed to be like their passive is like shield wall. You're supposed to keep them packed up together to have extra armor.
I tried that once. I had like one fight where that felt appropriate.
But really, there is no reason to use human units when you could be using Varl units unless they're archers. I never found a compelling reason to use Hogan or Mogan, even though I had them a long time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, all of my human fights ended up with me with, like, Rook, Alette, Oddleaf, all my archers, Rook being the best unit in the freaking world.
Yeah, Rook is the best unit in the game by far, because he is a archer, only he has a melee attack.
Yeah,
other archers can't attack units.
Other archers cannot do that. Rook just takes out an axe and says, okay, it's time to go.
And his active ability is he will stab something with a knife, and it'll do armor damage. And then every ally in range will attack that person.
Yeah, even so, if they're archers, they can be like, oh, bam! So he's an archer, he has melee, and he works even better with units that are already good.
And he can pass through friendly units, because he's a landsman.
Mm-hmm. His passive ability is the ability to walk through allies as long as, you know, he ends in a square of his own.
Yeah, which makes him very powerful.
He can go anywhere and do anything, more or less. So if he has a high strength score, you just have him do his attack. If he's out of strength, he's still basically just as powerful as long as you have an ally in range. Rook's pretty good.
Rook's really good.
I loaded out with Rook every opportunity I had.
Yes, much the same.
But he's a human unit. It's pretty good. Let's see. So we have like human landsmen, human shields, human archers.
And then
I think that's actually it for humans. You have
the shieldmen all have different things. The shieldmen
they have different actives
units, though.
Yeah.
They all feel sort of different except for their passive. That's there's only two.
Oh, I'm sorry. Human wizard.
And there is a single wizard.
there's a wizard.
Ivan. The whiniest man.
He whines and he looks kind of like Rook.
And he's this like guy with scraggly beard.
No, he's Rook turned at a different angle.
Rook combs his hair.
Rook does comb his hair. I guess when you like throw lightning around, you can't keep your hair tamed.
Right, it's very staticky.
Mm-hmm.
I like the flavor behind him throwing lightning. He just jams his stick into the ground and rips apart some of the threads that make the world, and they become lightning.
Yeah. The little bits of flavor text and the polish touches are what this game does super well.
But the combat is missing things.
I think the combat is missing something core, and
that's I wrote down talking points, and that's one of the things I wrote down is the core mechanic aren't used in a very compelling way. Like, in Final Fantasy Tactics, the core mechanic there is, like, you have different classes, you can mash them together to make combinations.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always there and always centered
in
the
goodness.
Entire game.
No, no. A lot of our audience are screaming at us right now. They're pikemen.
Yeah, there are pikemen.
I forgot about the spear guys.
They're, yeah.
Okay, so they're human spear guys. Luden is one. Yeah,
there's the other one is a
pre-order guy. The back. If you backed the game, you get an additional character.
Yeah, and that shows you how important he is to the plot.
I didn't know. I didn't know that he was a backer only man. I guess I should have, but then again, you get the same, like, one conversation with him that you get out of anyone, so it's like,
yeah.
Okay, you're equally important to everyone else, which is to say not.
And he's better than Luden, but Luden also blows, so it's hard to be worse than Luden.
Yeah, the spear guys have a move where, okay, for one, as a spearman, they can hit from, like, an additional square away.
And they can hit through a single square away diagonally.
Yeah. And they have their ability is to, like, impale and then kick you. So they do one strength damage, and then the unit is impaled, and they take one strength damage whenever they move a square.
Yeah.
So if you have a pushing move, then you can force movement and get more strength damage out of them.
Or if you use it against the slingers, who, whenever you hit them, they run away for a
square. Right, that's their passive.
Yeah.
Which
is supposed to make them, like, hard to pin down, but in practice just makes them waste time.
Yeah, because then they have to spend their turn getting back to you a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's there as a passive so that they don't have the shatter passive.
Yeah, so like all the other dredge do.
All the dredge have a built-in drawback to them.
Yeah.
Because they're higher armor units than you are generally.
Yeah, they have very high armor, and they justify that in the game because they're made out of stone, so...
Yeah, but they also have emotions.
They also have meat.
And give birth.
Yeah, they do have babies.
They have their little stone babies.
And that's when that's from a narrative standpoint, that's when the game starts going, maybe the dredge aren't invading, maybe they're running from something anyway.
Yeah, except the game wanted to raise that question but not offer a response or an answer to it.
They show you that snake.
Yeah, I stopped caring after that. Especially after, you know, it's like, oh, let's take care of the dredge baby. And I thought it was going to be, like, that was going to be important, right? It
never comes up again.
But then it isn't.
All that's for is to get you the godstone item. If you leave the baby, you don't get the godstone.
Oh, okay. I guess that structurally makes a little more sense. So you go on this journey from two different directions, and they switch back and forth, basically for no reason. There's no narrative justification for your perspective being in one or the other place. It's just whatever's happening.
Yeah. I don't mind that so much, though.
There's one problem. There's one nitpick that I have with that.
Yeah.
And that's that it would be fine if that was just, you know, the way they chose to tell the story. Like, okay, yeah, now I'm following these, and, you know, eventually we'll meet up, and then we have to figure things out. Because they want to tell a broader story. And if we see it from different angles, that has the opportunity for showing us more of the story, and it's natural to follow other characters. The problem I have is that time continues to pass while you are not in the perspective of one or the other. There's no reason to do this. It's, like, the whole point of doing a, like, back and forth, you know, meanwhile, this other stuff, let's see how they got here kind of thing. Let's see it from the other side. It's not that way. It's... Everyone else on the far end just sort of goes on hold.
Yeah, like it switches when you get to, like, Grofheim with the Varl people. Then it switches to Rook and the humans, and then
if you think you've built yourself up a good reserve of days, so it'll tell you not only how many supplies you have, but how many remaining days of supplies you have.
Yeah.
Suddenly this number will shrink because off camera, or like in the other perspective, days passed.
And wow, really? I never noticed that.
That absolutely happens. And you don't even get the morale boost from spending time not on the march.
That's disgusting.
It's
that's terrible.
It's pretty cruel as a trick to pull on your player, and it's a kind of thing that you experienced, you wouldn't even notice had happened to you. You're just, okay, because of the story happening, your numbers went away. So, good work, player.
That's not why I noticed the last time I played. Mm. I'm going to tell you a very dark secret.
Oh, boy.
The game keeps track of how many units you have, like your little clansmen and your little fighters and Varl. And when you're just traveling, you'll encounter the Dredge, and it'll tell you how many Dredge are going to fight you and how many warriors you have.
Right, the war mechanic.
Yeah, the war mechanic, and then you go into battle. Those scale. So if fewer people you will fight, the number of Dredge will be lower.
It never matters.
It never
matters. Oh my god, it mechanically, intentionally never matters.
I never bought any supplies ever. I spent all of my renown making my unit stronger.
That's...
And the only drawback, there's only two ways it matters in the game. One is if your morale is low, you have low willpower. And two, at the end of the game, if you don't have a lot of units when you're under siege, you just have to fight on the wall every day.
Oh.
So you don't lose any people.
So more tactics battles?
So you get more tactics battles, which gets you more renown anyways.
Oh, great. Oh, one tiny little more mechanic that I think we missed. If you kill a unit, you get a little star on the horn that's in the top.
The horn.
And you can, on any unit's turn, touch the horn and give that unit a point of willpower.
Yeah, I like
which
that.
Would,
that's fair.
Right, that would serve to make up for the fact that this grueling pace that Gnomebitten is established with no supplies would mean that you can still get willpower just by killing.
Yeah, you can just kill people.
Yeah, you kill them and then...
And really, low morale wasn't that big of a drawback.
Yeah, and honestly, it only, at the most, robs you of two, I think.
Yeah, just two. Many of the characters have eight.
Yeah, your characters can have kind of a lot of it. But
the Varl, they kind of characterize that. Humans usually have higher exertion and willpower, and Varl are just larger and stronger. But still worth more using the Varl than humans. But,
yeah. There was only one time when I really regretted having a bunch of Varl. And it's a time when I was forced to, because that's what all my units were.
And
it was on the bridge. Not the bridge, I'm sorry. The wrecked
Ridgehorn.
Town Ridgehorn. Yes.
Yeah, and you know why? Because of something that happens only in that fight and nowhere else that really bothered me.
It has a hole.
There's a hole.
Yeah.
That map has a terrain variation.
That one map in the entire goddamned game
has terrain. There's a visible hole.
Visible
in the
hole.
Ground.
You can't walk over it. Every other fight takes place in a flat, featureless expanse.
And it always got me when I got to that fight because I was so used to there being a square that I did not notice that there were just a hole there, and I didn't take that into consideration. And it really wouldn't matter a whole lot, but.
But yeah, they send a bunch of ranged units after you and. Block up the tiny entrances with huge men that you are controlling. It's just an annoying fight. You're never in any real danger.
Yeah, but really, that is one of my biggest gripes with the combat of the game. With other tactics games, the terrain is usually super important, just because the biggest part of tactics games is controlling enemy movement.
Yeah,
and usually how you do that is through advantageous uses of terrain.
The point there is that this is the difference between a tactics game and other kinds of role-playing game.
Yeah.
You know, because you have a lot of units to manage and you have this space to move and attack in, you have to manage your movement, deal with terrain, maybe even exploit terrain to your advantage.
Yeah.
Not in the Banner Saga, though.
It's a square.
Squares, go.
I think it's a 9x9 grid or something similar, maybe larger than that.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing that's missing. This core mechanic is terrain.
The other thing I was going to talk about with that is tactics has its multi-classing, which is always persistent. Fire Emblem has the weapon triangle, which is always persistent,
mm-hmm.
and it's always relevant. There's nothing that's really always persistent and always relevant in the Banner Saga.
Yeah, the whole break their armor, hit their strength.
I guess splintering is sort of always there and persistent.
That fades out when you start having to deal with enemy humans.
Enemy humans, which you fight very rarely.
Yeah, it's rare that you actually go after enemy humans in Varl.
When you fight enemy humans, it's always piss easy because they're humans. You just crush them with your Varl and shoot them with arrows.
Yeah, I remember. they did more damage to me than the dredge, but I was in no danger of. I never felt like I was in danger of losing.
Until the final fight,
in which I did definitely lose because I ran out of units that could deal damage. Like, oh. I think
what level were your units, if you can remember?
I don't remember. I know that Ivan was max, Rook was max. That's the only guarantees I have.
Everyone I had was maxed except Mogir. Or Mogir, who was 4. Because I had spent all of my renown leveling up instead of buying supplies. So I was able to pretty effectively just focus down Belor. It became kind of scary towards the end, and he had killed like 3 of my people, but then Ivor killed him. The Varl who killed 2 Sunder.
Wait, did you get a different plot than I did?
No.
I couldn't do that. I did not have the option of killing him with anyone but my arrow wielder.
Yeah, there's like the first fight mm-hmm. where like you shoot him with the silver arrow and it weakens him, and as soon as you shoot him with the silver arrow, another fight starts.
Yeah.
And then you just tap, and for me he killed Rook after he shot him. And then everyone else just had to kill Belor after he was shot with the silver arrow. It's like Ganon.
Like
it switches to another fight after you shoot him.
Yeah, no, the secondary fight. Wait. Yeah, this I can't remember which of those fights was the problematic one.
It was the second one. The second fight is where every time you hit Belor, he gets a turn.
Okay.
And that was...
Yeah, no, that was definitely a problem. Because for me, it was Alet, and he did remove Alet from the fight. So, yeah. And at that point, I guess I had taken too many lumps, because I was out of people who could realistically deal damage. And the fight went on for an absurdly long time because I had Oddleaf and a lot of willpower. So Oddleaf would take a step back, plant a trap in front of her. Then Belor would walk up to take his like bonus turn or whatever and like walk into the trap, and I would get a turn back. But it didn't. He also regenerates health.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
That's the busted part. Yeah.
Well, he's supposed to be immortal, is like the thing. So he regenerates health.
Right. It came off as more annoying than immortal.
Yeah. He's. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah.
Because he just looks like the same. Here's the other thing. The dredge never say anything to you.
No, they. Although supposedly capable of compassion and capable of religion,
mm-hmm.
they are not capable of diplomacy.
They cannot talk to you at all.
Yeah. You can use illusions on them, but you cannot communicate with them.
Right. All right. The plot is Rook and his crew are just trying to like go.
Yeah, they're trying to get away
They need to get away. Mogir, is it Mogir?
Yeah, Mogir and Hakon.
Hakon is
next to be king.
Right. Hakon sent to collect taxes, but then things happen and he gets called back to
Uban. Uban is sent to be collect taxes, and then Hakon is going with the prince to the Varl capital to make an alliance.
Okay, fair enough. The Prince of Men, which is a cool sounding title.
For like this little weenie guy with like mm-hmm. a fake mustache.
Yep. And so both of our cavalcades collide in the Varl home as they realize, oh no, the dredge are attacking. We've got to circle the wagons. Okay, so Rook and crew make it to Varlholm. Why didn't they just call it Varlheim?
That would have been cool.
I would have liked that and understood it. And now, anyway. And then you blow up the bridge. You meet a wizard. The wizard says, oh, we have to go south to...
Yeah, I dreamed of my girlfriend. Let's go visit her.
I saw my ghost girlfriend in a dream. We have to go. Then we follow him for no reason. And when we make it there, she's not there. And we have no reason to go anywhere. But we follow him elsewhere for no reason.
Yeah. The game at that point literally asks you
The Oregon Trail. Yes.
Yeah,
you come to a river and you're off. You have the option of caulking the wagons and floating across
and fording the river. Hiring locals to help.
Yes.
That's exactly an Oregon Trail question.
The whole thing has been a massive Oregon Trail kind of. What do you call that? Illusion or reference. And then they put a lampshade on it. And I didn't like that at that point. I got a little chuckle, but then I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How can you do this after all we've been through together? Yes, okay, I got it. You know?
It's tone dissonance. Because the whole tone of the game is like, you're getting crushed.
Yeah, the tone is as cold as the terrain.
Yeah, it's very bleak.
Bleak is the perfect word. It's just, they try to sell that, but then all this other stuff happens.
Yeah,
runs contrary to the theme, not in a like naturalistic, comedic, making the best of things or like gallows humor, but rather a kind of schmaltzy Showtime putting on like fake eyeglasses with a nose on it. And I'm like, what?
Like putting on the marks, the Groucho Marx mustache.
Yeah, put on the glasses with mustache thing, but. Jeez. So yeah, okay, so then, alright, we caulk the wagons and go to yet another place where we have the final showdown, but before we can...
You try to build a boat.
Out of, like, houses or whatever. The Juno, that's her name.
Yeah, Juno.
Ghost girlfriend. Yeah. Ghost girlfriend shows up in real life? Is it in a dream to Rook? Is she actually there?
She's actually there.
Oh, okay. So she's not a ghost anymore.
She's not a ghost.
And then...
She was dead? They never explained
she
that.
She was dead and talked to, like, the snake dragon.
Or the moray eels, really.
Right. And then it, like, tries to blast her, says it's going to eat the world but can't. And then it runs away and is never relevant again.
Yeah. Although...
Yeah, it was a really cool moment.
Really cool moment.
Honestly,
it was relevant in the rest of the narrative.
Yeah,
comes up again in this narrative.
That was a really good midpoint. I felt like the story held together up until the middle of the game, and then like, you know, we meet Bellower, we have to run away because he's too powerful. We blow up the bridge to halt the dredge's advance,
and it doesn't matter.
And then, like, there's a snake in a dreamland, and we're like, oh, now we're setting up the stage for the second act, or the, like, fourth or fifth act, depending.
Before that.
Yeah.
The snake cracks actual mountains in half.
Right. It's sort of doing its thing in the background, and you're like, what the hell is that?
It's breaking mountains.
So we see it in that little cutscene with Ghost Girlfriend. Then she calls to Wizard Lad Ivan. Then we run at Wizard's behest to where she's supposed to be, and she's not there. We keep going. We end up meeting her anyway. She takes Rook back to a godstone that the dredge are all sort of worshipping for no reason. She says that she casts a spell on him so that the dredge can't see them.
Yeah.
Which could just be a lie.
Yeah, she is a wizard, so I don't trust her.
Also, her plan is they have to climb this godstone and pick a piece of it to make into... a fake death spell that will not kill Bellower, but convince Bellower that he's dead.
Yeah, that's their plan.
Like, the plan is to make a magical lie? It doesn't matter. Like,
the plan was that, like, the silver in this statue was, like, this god was, like, the god of secrets, and he gave the other gods weapons that they used to murder each other. And we're going to use this silver to pierce Bellower's skin. And it'll put the fear in him, and then I will use my mind taking to make him believe.
And the thing is, okay, so part of this magic spell is apparently that Rook can't tell anyone what the actual plan is, and he has to tell them that it's a for real kill spell and will work.
I think the reason she says to use that is because if he actually told them it wouldn't kill him, they would just revolt.
Right.
They're nearly doing that beforehand. Like, what? Let's build the boat. Don't fight Bellower.
That part makes sense. What I think doesn't make sense is Juno telling Rook that.
Yeah.
Why not just have Juno also lie to Rook? Why include him in the secret if that is truly it?
I think I know what it is. If she's a wizard, so she's manipulating him.
Oh, definitely.
She'll know he'll go along in the plan if there's some feeling of conspiracy between the two of them, and then she can sort of look at him meaningfully when they're talking and remind him of, hey, don't fuck this up, man.
Okay. So she's being secretive for the purpose of being secretive.
Yeah, she's being secretive for the purpose of controlling his actions, because she's a wizard.
Okay. Honestly, I think you could take almost any line from the game and try to attribute it to, like, have people who have played the game try to attribute that line to one of the characters. You know, who said this?
Who said this?
And it would be impossible because Juno and Hakon and Oddleaf and even Rook and Ubin, Eggle. Okay, maybe not Eggle, but...
Eagle, well, not Eagle, because you know Eagle hasn't said anything, because he's dead.
He died. Eggle, it's almost charming how Eggle can die in every scene that he's in.
He can... I got the achievement for him living.
For him living? Okay, well, you made the correct choices that keep his dumb butt alive.
His useless ass alive.
So useless. Man, that's another thing about the combat. Okay, so in, like, Fire Emblem, I have all these named characters, and they give me replacements along the way because people can die, and they're just gone.
Yeah.
In the Banner Saga that is supposed to have this bleak narrative tone, you cannot get people killed in tactics. Like, send them into danger, and they will live.
Yeah. Like, they'll get injured, which, whenever they die in the fight, they get injured for several days, in which their strength is temporarily lowered. Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So you can do no wrong, as far as I could tell. And it also, like, the number of days they had to rest didn't seem to have a rule to it that I could tell.
I don't know. Like, it seemed... like, it made sense, like, if they were injured three, their strength would be lowered by three, they have to rest 3 days. Then the second day, they'd be injured two, and then the next day they injured one. But it didn't really make a lot of sense what caused them to be injured a lot.
Right. Like, why was it 3 days this time, but only 1 day the last time?
Like, they never explain it.
Nope. So I didn't do enough iterations to figure it out or care hard enough, but...
And about characters dying, there's not a lot of clues in the dialogue choices which ones are important and which ones aren't. Because there's so many of them that just aren't important. Like, especially when you're talking to your lament mans in your tents. You can just say anything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Almost nothing is important. That's the illusion of the game.
Yeah, that's the dragonage illusion, really.
It's like they give you all these dialogue choices. None of them are meaningful. The numbers that they sometimes modify are themselves not meaningful. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you have renown. Well, it sort of matters.
Renown is the only number that does matter.
It doesn't matter how many clansmen, how many fighters, how many Varl you have. If you keep people alive, you know, that number is supposed to represent people, and we're given a kind of external moral imperative to keep them alive. But
every time a day passes and you have no supplies, you get little numbers that show up and say, here's how many people died today.
Yep.
And at first it was like, oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
I stopped caring. Like, yeah. Well, we're going to Vorsgard. I don't care if people die. Just throw them off the side of the wagon.
Right. Whereas, on your journey, we could have, say, three different endpoints. Right?
Yeah.
So, there's this, like, final branching path that only opens up to you if you have enough people for it. Why not? How about that?
There are two endings, and I think we both took one or the other. Because you had as
far as I know, that is the one thing that affects the ending. Is like, you can choose to have a let shoot the arrow, or you can have Rook, who is like you, shoot the arrow.
I had Rook shoot the arrow because of a narrative thing. Like, he not want his daughter dying. I think I know why you got Alet to shoot the arrow. Because Rook is a stronger character.
Yeah, I anticipated that whoever was shooting this was a goner, and I wanted to keep Rook around.
You monster.
I mean, Alet is kind of useless as far as archers go. Her active is the worst.
Yeah, I never liked Oddleaf's active. I think I liked Alet's. I used hers more. I never set the trap.
I never, ever had the enemy lined up.
Really?
It just never happened.
I did it a couple of times. Really, all I cared about was that they were archers.
Yeah, that's the super more important part.
None of them were as good as the Fire Lady, because her active was actually...
Her active was excellent, and she ran away, and I don't know why, and I felt cheated.
You set the woods on fire.
Yes, I did.
And then she ran away.
Yeah, she just sort of leaves. And I'm like, wait, why did she do that?
It didn't seem important, did it? And then it was.
Yep.
None of the choices make a lot of sense, Stoic. You should fix that, baby.
How about only leave in choices that matter? Or how about this? A lot of the choices had to do with the suspected exchange of one thing for another thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's a surprise. If I do the risky thing, will I get a renown reward? Will I get more clansmen, which is like an anti-reward? Will I get more fighters?
Yeah.
Will I turn fighters into clansmen because they're not allowed to fight anymore? Will I recruit clansmen as fighters by training them?
That does happen.
There are a lot of little exchanges like that that you can sort of anticipate, or some that are intentionally kind of a guess. And that would be neat if any of the numbers mattered.
Yeah, it would. I think the reason they made encounters scale was because there's something that a lot of this is me griping as an old man, not really, against modern games, is they want you to beat them. They want you to win. Like they want you to beat and experience their game. And so in order to do that, they their numbers don't matter. When instead they could have had this bleak game that could have been really bleak and hammer that home. Just be like, oh, you lose.
Yeah, you ran out of people. The remaining ones oust you. You lose. You get the bad end right now.
You lose. You ran out of people.
So
and
the game, okay, so it has all these choices in it. And it felt intentional anyway, prevent you from going back and trying again. With your choices.
You have certain numbers of saves.
Yeah, and it just kind of
bottlenecked really quickly.
Yeah, it quick saves so often that, okay, suppose you have like five quick saves or whatever. They happen so frequently that the one that you might have thought was at a turning point or a guessing point or whatever is so far back now that you can't go that far back. And it's like, oh, I didn't even... Well, now that I know how this plays out,
Special guest star tonight on the Skulls Cast is Cicada.
Oh,
give it up for Cicada.
Yeah, I can barely hear that, so I think that the also home audience is going to barely hear that. Yeah. I like summer cicadas. They're charming.
A little bit charming.
So how do we round this up? What I usually try to do if I like a game, then I summarize it in the few things that I don't like. And if I don't like a game, I summarize it in the few things that I do like. The damning with faint praise and praising with faint damnation. With this one, Banner Saga is really on the fence.
Yeah, it seems like I usually do letter grades. I know not everyone likes, but this is like a C-minus or something.
I agree with your assessment. It's really beautiful game with a
for most of the game, has really nice tone, and the setting is excellent.
Yeah, I felt really wrapped up in it up until like halfway through the game.
Yeah, and I actually enjoyed the combat until about halfway up until the game.
Yeah,
and then I sort of realized what
you
was
realize
going
that
on.
It becomes much the same, and the only thing that could keep your interest after that point is trying to, like, with any new people, seeing, oh, do you have a new move? Can I use this? Can I combine with this?
When really they don't.
They don't, and they're not better than the wizard or rook.
Although I didn't use a whole lot because I think of what Ivan is, his active ability is you zap a target, and then any diagonally adjacent targets also get zapped with more damage.
Right. It's a strength attack that bypasses armor.
Yes, very powerful. And it's you can hit a lot of people doing it, but it doesn't care about sides.
Nope.
So several times.
Oh yeah.
You zap a guy, realizing you would hit things adjacent to it, and because there's different units of different sizes, it can sort of be hard to determine on the fly who is diagonally.
They
adjacent.
Also don't let you change your perspective on the battle, and tall units can get in your way of seeing the basic elements of combat.
Yeah.
Which is freakishly annoying.
So often you can end up harming a lot of the opponent's team, but also zapping your entire team with this lightning.
I have definitely done that. But
I just used an archer instead of him.
It took a little getting used to, but the bypassing armor thing was just too great, and I could very easily set up the corner, kind of like caddy corner game, than I could the, The like lineup game for Alette. It was super easy to do the corners. Moreover, and this is my favorite thing, I could have Ivan be the conductor.
Right.
You can have him move into like corner with some others, and then it's like, all right, it starts with me, and he shoots himself, and then it can branch to others.
He's a red wizard. That's what it is.
He has a ton of versatility. And starts out at max level, and you have to, like, fill in his points.
Yeah, but you don't get to fill in his points the first time.
The first time. And so you're like, oh, wait, he's level 5 already? What? there are some other features of the combat, but I don't think it's worth going into. The reason I say I'm really on the fence about this, and I can't pick one or the other way to grade this, is because it does have excellent flavor. The music's really good. The visuals are appealing. Some of the dialogue is like quality written. There are a lot of cute moments. There are a lot of like cheap kind of jokes. But then the overarching narrative doesn't make sense. The choices seem irrelevant.
The choices are definitely irrelevant. I think I enjoyed the overarching narrative more than you did, but I understand your complaints with it.
No, after the midpoint, I'm like, why am I following the wizard? Why are we going this way?
Yeah, why are we doing this?
And that fundamental break in terms of, like, we're on this long, hard march. We knew why we were on this long, hard march before. Yeah. Now we really don't.
I think you're following the wizard, but you're also doing the same thing you're doing before. Like, as soon as you leave Einertoft, like, the dredge start chasing you again because they took the city. And there's always that pressure on you, which maybe the only things about
It felt really artificial at that point. It's
Well,
better run away from the dredge. This thing that has been going on since the beginning and has no meaningful endpoint or modifying point in sight.
If only they had characterized everyone, including the dredge, as much as they characterized Ivor, because he was the one guy who got a ton of characterization, and it sort of made him a really good character for it, and then everyone else suffered for lacking it.
The problem I had, I agree, Ivor is a pretty good character. He doesn't really have an arc, though. I wish he did.
His arc had already happened.
Yeah. It had already taken place, and like we experience it in him telling us what it was.
Yeah, and there is that really dramatic moment where he gets maimed. He's still great after he gets maimed, but he does get maimed, and his class changes. I thought that was cute.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he goes from a shield banger, and then he gets his shield arm cut off by Bellower, and he gets an axe, and then his passive changes.
Oh, I didn't...
He gets the heavy impact passive.
I kept using him, but I didn't realize that it happened. That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
So, Ivor is the character victory from the game, and everyone else is a failure. The tactics are fun up to a point, and then hugely lacking something fundamental and just sort of missing. And the story is garbage, and I don't like it.
I assume they're making another game.
But
what would you have them change in the next game?
In a way, I hope so, because that's the only way that the story could mean anything in this game. But in a way, I hope not, because I am not at all interested to see what happens next in a story sense, and would prefer, honestly, no plot at all to what we got. I would prefer you have your caravan, and you get, a direction, and you can kind of go there and get something. Maybe a reward in terms of an upgrade to one of your guys, maybe a new guy, and you sort of construct things yourself. And not really have a saga at all. I would have preferred the banner.
Just the banner.
Just the banner. Give me that. There is a lot that didn't make sense. They just sort of mention things and then they're not important.
No.
Like there's
really.
It's
all set dressing.
The menders who are wizards, who keep the banner that auto dictates history as it happens.
Yeah, and then they never really explain. Like, they talk about the menders being builders and healers, but they never, the two menders they show you aren't.
Mm.
The two menders they show you are Electro Wizard and Lie Master.
The lying ghost girlfriend lady who talked to the snake.
Snake Talk Lie Master. Lie Master. That's
snake,
a name.
Snake Talk and Lie Master. It's pretty good. I have a hard time recommending the game to basically anyone. I think my biggest criticism of the game, and I'll just sort of lay that as my grade, is that it tries to be a tactics game and doesn't fully be a tactics game, and it doesn't succeed at that. And it also tries to be a choose your own adventure narrative game, and it fails at that too.
Yeah.
So it tries to marry these two things and does neither well.
I think I know exactly the reason for it. And I want to talk about one of our favorite game studios.
Oh boy.
In comparison. They have a problem that Tales of Games is currently having.
Whoa.
They got too big for their britches because they got so much money. And
oh no.
And Banner Saga, Stoic, were very pressured to release their game. And I think they rushed development and released it early without finishing it.
Oh, man.
Whereas Tales of Games, Barkley 2, by all standards, should have been released by now by their first predictions.
Mm.
They're sitting on it, finishing it. And every time I've talked to them, they've been like, oh, when it's done, we'll release it when it's done. We got so much money. We felt like we had to add more to the game.
I would prefer that game companies release their games when they are finished.
Yes.
I would far prefer many delays for a complete game. But what we got was not complete.
This is not a complete game. This is a game that that is the most damning thing you can say about a game. It does not accomplish what it sets out to do.
I hate saying it, and it's really a shame, because this is an independent studio, and it is a smaller project, and I want this kind of, I do want this kind of thing to succeed in the face of a world where we have large production studios and whatever. So
especially
I think
they left BioWare is the thing.
They were wise enough to get the hell out of there.
And they wanted to do their own thing, and they didn't have time. They got too big for the bridge.
Yeah. So I guess my recommendation is that you should buy it but not play it. support this kind of thing, but I don't think you'll enjoy it.
I don't think about that. I don't think that either.
Did you play the multiplayer?
I didn't. I was going to kind of recommend that we did before the Skulls cast.
Yeah,
I downloaded it and looked at it. And immediately said no.
All right. I didn't even get that far because I never really wanted to play the game again. until they, like, you know, fixed it, but whatever.
It could be more interesting to play against a human. It would make a lot of the classes sort of useless, like the shield bangers.
Ha.
Their whole, but...
Right, like AI affecting or whatever.
It's a free-to-play game, and that means in order to get your units, you have to grind it out. And I said, no, I am not doing that.
Right. At first, it was a microtransaction thing. So there's a bit of drama behind this story as well,
yeah.
In that the Kickstarter backers in February of 2013 got this thing instead, which was the multiplayer online tactics game.
The Banner Saga Factions.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the backers had been interested in this project as a choose-your-own-adventure story set in this bleak future Norse world or whatever, and didn't really care at all for tactics combat.
Yeah.
And then they released this game, and a lot of their backers were like, what is this? This is not what we backed. And then
they had to quickly say, "This is just this is like our alpha."
Yeah, no, we're still doing the game, guys. We're still doing it, but it got so big that we have to do it even more, and it's going to take us longer. So in the meantime, here's this cash grab with microtransactions that's pay to win, and here fight against each other or something.
And it was all a big mess, and it's bad. And
yeah,
the game breaks my heart. From how it could have had a lot of potential, or it did have a lot of potential, and it sort of
what it honestly
fell short.
Yep. What it made me want to do was one, read a book.
Oh yeah, like if this was a book, it'd be a lot better.
Oh yeah, no. I would much rather read just the plain old book, not even a choose your own adventure like involved near it. No, just give me a book. It's flavorful. It's a cool world. Tell me about that. And I also wanted to play Fire Emblem because I think that's what each of these things wanted to be, and so I should get that experience instead.
Yeah, Fire Emblem, that game. Yeah,
like really, you any know, given like... Fire Emblem, I would.
Yeah, or maybe not.
I mean, you know, like the early ones. I think okay, I have to back up from that. I can honestly recommend if you're into Fire Emblem, 6. If you're not into Fire Emblem, 8 and on. And if you're sort of on the fence, 7 and on.
All I know is that this game seems like a better looking but worse version of like Fire Emblem Awakening. Because that game does like characterization and narrative growth way better than this game does.
That's astonishing given how clumsy and awful anime games tend to do that. Really,
yeah.
Anything that gets localized for an English market rather than written in English is just... You can pick it out immediately for how clumsy it is and how bland the characters sound.
Yeah.
Then you get things that are honest to God localized or written in English, honest to God localized being Nier, written in English being Secret of Evermore, and you're like, this is night and day. I feel like I'm involved all of a sudden. What?
And then you get things like Ace Attorney, where it's localized but extremely goofy, where it works in that way, but I think that's a different skull cast.
That probably is. And probably one I should have an even more different skull on for.
Ah.
So. But thanks for joining me, Gnome. I think we've given our honest assessment and recommendation. And
lack of recommendation.
Yeah. thumbs sideways to down.
One thumb down, one thumb sideways.
Yeah. C minus.
C minus.
Okay.
You pass. Not much better than that.
But yeah, okay. One last little good thing that I can say about the game, and this is polish. Whenever you win a battle and it has the banner splash across, it's like you defeated your foes. It shows you the number of kills you got in totaling up their skulls.
Skulls.